Welcome, everyone, to our first program of Parenting 101, where we'll be addressing topics of interest to parents. And today, my guest is Laura Snyder from the Astoria School Board. Welcome, Laura.
Well, thanks for having me, Elizabeth. I'm honored to be your first guest.
Yes, you are my very first guest. And I figured we needed a show about parenting on Coast Community Radio. So here it is. And we're going to talk about a number of things about the Astoria school system, which
Hopefully I can answer.
You do your very
I'll
best.
I'll do the best I can.
And one question I had, my daughter was in sixth grade at Lewis and Clark, which at the time was divided into fourth, fifth, and sixth grade. Mm-hmm. And now the sixth graders have been moved over to the middle school. And I'm wondering what the advantages of that or how that was put together.
That was put together as the result of a long evaluation of a reconfiguration that was done what was probably 7 years ago now. There's a lot of research and opinions that you could read on both sides of that issue, and you can't even believe the amount of people that, you know, basically are spending their lives researching where sixth graders belong in schools. It's a, you know, it's a delicate age. You're 11, you're 12, your hormones are starting. So depending on what you read and what you choose to compile, you could make a very coherent argument either way. In our district, for our facilities, it was going to work really well. What we had prior to moving the sixth grade to the middle school was the kindergartners all alone in a building. There's no research or data that you can find that says that that's a good idea.
No.
And that needed to be corrected. So what worked for our demographic, our enrollment, the numbers of students we had, our facilities, was to give the kindergartners an experience of going to a school where they could stay for 3 years like the rest of the students in the district. And that had us move the sixth graders up to the middle school. Now, our sixth graders are not, they physically attend the middle school. They don't attend a true, they don't have a true middle school experience. They don't rotate to their science teacher, their social studies teacher, their math teacher like the seventh and eighth graders do. They're pretty self-contained, you know, with
one teacher.
They go to school in an elementary model. They're there in the building. It's a comfortable transition to seventh and eighth grade. They've got a comfort level of attending the middle school. They still have the comfort and safety of being in a self-contained classroom and continuing in that kind of secure environment.
Sixth grade is a transitional grade, and you'll see some kids who are, they look like they're in elementary school, and then you'll see these very big kids, and they're all together in the same grade.
There's a lot of different growth and development. The whole middle school feels like that.
It's a very interesting time. I think many people I speak to say middle school was tough.
Yes.
They still remember it as being the toughest part of their education. Certainly for me it was. Just so much going on in your, like you said, hormones, all sorts of things are going on at that age. So it's a very important age.
As a school board person speaking about this, it really improved the grade configuration situation regarding the kindergarten situation, which was not acceptable. It allowed children to not go to school for 1 year and then transition to another school at the age of five or six, which was really big. It also, economically and educationally, the way that we had things, it was the best case scenario.
This comes around to a topic that was very, very controversial, or I'd say very emotional, which is when, instead of going to one school from kindergarten through, I guess it was sixth grade, the way the system used to be, the system got moved around so that first, second, and third graders were together at one school, fourth, fifth, and sixth graders at another school. And what is your take on that?
Well, that was an emotional issue for me and my family, too. Speaking in 2011 about it, I accept that that's what we do now. I have to say that the reality of the finances of Oregon schools right now, many districts across the state are looking this year at closing schools, consolidating grades, moving grades around to make the finances work. on the upside, we've been there and done that. I think we would be forced to look at that now to save money if we hadn't already done it. I think the same with where the sixth grade belongs. There's definitely research and data on both sides of that issue. Personally, I wanted our schools to stay K-6 at the time, and I felt I was very emotionally involved. The best thing that we can do for students with the resources that we have, we are now doing it. It's mostly comfortable for people. It's working as far as, you know, it's we're going to have financial upheavals in the next budget cycle. That will not be one of them. And that's good.
So eventually this was going to happen.
Well, something was going to have to happen or is going to, you know, eventually we would have had to look at this as an option for sure. 2 years ago, we spent the year evaluating it. There were a lot of people that were really sad about it. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it working? We evaluated it. We found that the mostly school staff is happy with it. They like meeting with their grade level teams. We've sort of settled into it and made it work. You know, there are a lot less children here in the Astoria School District than there were a dozen years ago, 6 years ago, 8 years ago. Our enrollment is kind of settling where it is, but it has steadily gone down. We have to figure out whether we're using our facilities efficiently. We no longer have the funding or the ability to keep three elementary schools open without them being full. What we have now is what we're going to have.
Class sizes, when you have 25 to 30 kids in a room, mm-hmm. that's really hard to... Some kids need a lot more attention than others, and they can't have it if you have a huge amount of kids in a room.
Yeah, and the grade configuration and class sizes don't have a direct relationship. Class sizes is dependent on how many teachers you hire or keep in our case. This is, you know, when I talk about finances, it's really the entire state. We're not in a unique situation and in our school district of struggling.
Unfortunately.
Financially, very unfortunately. I think that keeping our classes as small as we possibly can is important to everyone across the board. That said, it doesn't mean that we're going to be able to have small classes. We don't have small classes now. We maintain fairly small classes in the real early elementary, and the data tells us that if we're going to only be able to do that in one place, that's the place to focus.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been able to do that partly through grant funding, outside funding, for that purpose, to keep kindergarten, first grade small.
You're listening to Parenting 101 on Coast Community Radio, and my guest is Laura Snyder from the Astoria School Board. And we're speaking about budgeting. One thing I'm very happy with that my daughter gets to have is there's art and music going on mm-hmm. at the middle school. And I almost hate to ask this, but how are the music and art programs going to be looked at in the budget that's coming up?
A lot of things are going to be looked at and discussed. I think historically up to now, I think the Astoria School District has been very exceptional about the outside of the core academic offerings that we continue to offer, even in tough budget times. Educational opportunities and sports and music and art is actually one of the state standards. You know, there's requirements that we have some amount of art, and I have to look it up.
I did not know that.
There are a lot of things that we do. Foreign language, which I'm a lobbyist for.
Earlier. It's easier to learn when you're young.
Well, yeah, and science tells us that. Most schools across the country don't act on that.
Unfortunately, again.
It is unfortunate. This is probably not the venue to discuss school financing, but we will be talking about a lot of things and how we are going to fund our schools. I don't want to be scary, but if you read the papers at all, the state is in a financial crisis, and therefore K-12 schools, as well as a lot of other, you know, human-related services, are going to be in financial crisis. So we're we're going to have to streamline even more. My hope would be that we keep many of our offerings. It's appealing to our students and our families to have opportunities like music, and for my child, athletics is huge.
I think their kids and the things like music and art keep them interested in school and looking forward to going to school.
Yeah, there's some things we have no choice about, because No Child Left Behind requires us to...
Oh, don't get me started on
well,
that.
Well, there are these things, you know, as creative as people want to be that are designing programs for our schools, there's a lot of requirements that you get no choices about. And so there's a balancing of that. You know, as I said, you know, I've been impressed here in this school district with what we've managed to keep for kids here.
Yeah, again, I'm delighted.
You know, there's nobody that wants to lose anything. But we have some major cuts to make, and I don't have any inside information about what those will be. I will tell you, though, this is probably a good moment to say that the board and our superintendent, Craig Hoppus, and the budget committee are going to start convening really early to start talking about these issues. And there will be two meetings that will be, well, the public can come to any meetings. There will be two particular meetings where we would like to hear from the public. Superintendent Hoppus is preparing all kinds of different scenarios. And there's nothing that we would like more than feedback or opinions or other ideas about those scenarios that we can manage with the money that we're given by the state of Oregon. February 8th and February 17th, both of those evenings, it's a Tuesday, February 8th and Thursday, February 17th at 7 o'clock. The venue is unknown. I think he's going to try to get a larger venue than our regular boardroom in the hopes of lots of people coming. Our board really wants to hear from people. And those will be opportunities to say, gosh, I hope we can keep music, or I hope we can keep soccer, or I'm willing to lose X. We're going to lose things. Our goal as a board is to be really transparent and lay it all on the table and let people mull it over. Our superintendent does a good job attempting to communicate.
Well, that's going to be a meeting I think quite a few parents should attend, and when we find out what the venue is.
I think most parents and families in the district are on the district email list. The district website should have that information. You can call the district office and find out.
And so, again, on Coast Community Radio, we will be
letting you know
about
those meetings. I'm sure it'll be in the paper. I'm sure it'll be announced on the radio.
I'm talking with Laura Snyder from the Astoria School Board. This is Parenting 101, and we'll be right back.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends. And look at all the bugs we found. Safely walk to school without a sound. Safely walk to school without a sound.
And we're back with Laura Snyder from the Astoria School Board. This is Parenting 101. And there are a number of programs I wanted to ask you about, because I think parents might not know about some of these programs. And one of them is the Strengthening Families program.
Strengthening Families, it's through a nonprofit called North Coast Parenting, and they've gotten funding from Ford Family Foundation to put this class on twice in a year. So this next class coming up will be the last opportunity this year. And what it is, it's for families with children ages between 10 and 14. It's a 7-week session. It starts on January 19th. You can contact the Astoria Middle School where it takes place to get more information or sign up. It's a great scenario because you get dinner. It's 5:30 to 8. you get child care for any younger children you have so that the focus can be on the child who is that fragile age of which we were referring earlier on, to the 10 to 14. And part of the evening would be spent with the kids in a room with a facilitator and the parents in a room with a facilitator and talking about, it's all about communicating with your child of that age. And it can be I have one 12-year-old and one 15-year-old, and it can be very delicate, and I'm not going to pretend that I'm good at it. And then the group comes back together, and I've heard wonderful things about this program. It's a great opportunity. It's free.
There you go.
And it's
free child care?
Free child care for those younger children, and it's a real interactive thing, and I would highly recommend looking into it if you are interested.
I can't think of anyone who couldn't use a little help with learning how to communicate with their tweens.
Yeah, and it's not for at-risk people or people that are really struggling or people whose kids are having problems. It's really for anybody that wants to, you know, enhance their ability to, I mean, nobody knows how to parent, right? I mean, maybe if you were started real young and then your kid goes to college and you start again, then you might have enough information to do it the second time. But, you know, we're all
learning as we go.
Just trying every day. So this is a great opportunity.
I know there's a new child care program going on. I guess that's administrated by the City of Astoria Parks and Rec. They have a new program going on for child care. It's called Lil Sprouts.
Yeah, and, you know, I really admire our city staff and our superintendent of our school district and the players in this. It's an amazing, and the community college is also a partner in this. When the Astoria Community Child Center closed suddenly, that left a big gap. Child care is a huge issue on the North Coast. So I'm really pleased with the way that the city, the college, and the school district came together. We have a facility that's already been made to be that over at Gray School.
The Port of Play.
Yeah, and the child care center that was there. So there's all this, you know, interactive areas, and it's set up. And then the city, Park and Rec, is going to be the running it, basically. The school district isn't running the child care, operating it. And I think the college is part of the partnership through their early childhood education program. I think it's an example to everyone across the region and the state, for that matter, in how we're going to need to share resources to get things done with very little financing help from outside.
How about the Astoria School District Teen Parent Program?
And that's also in Gray School. That's a high school class. And that, you know, that really melds with the child care, because we can get these girls going to school and have a safe place for their kids. It's a good kind of joining in that facility.
And how can folks find out about these programs?
They can call the high school, the teen parenting education program. That's Astoria High School. 325-3911 is their number. The Park and Rec would be the contact for child care, and I believe their space is open.
How about the alternative high school? That's something I'm really excited about, that they've gotten started.
Yeah, we started the alternative school to serve students, and we have students from the whole county coming for that. There's several arms to that, and some of that is teen parents, so there's a crossover. You know, it's for students who, for whatever reason, are not thriving in a regular high school environment, whether they have to work full-time to make ends meet and they can't do their schooling during the regular school hours, they have to make up credits, they want to graduate, they are parents, they are at risk for one reason or another of not finishing high school, whether they've had, you know, social issues in the regular high school, or so the alternative school provides a space where students mostly work in online courses at their own pace during the hours that, you know, there are hours that they need to be there, but they're not a full school day. And they do, a lot of those students do take some classes also at the high school.
So the high school would be where you would find out about this, about mm-hmm. the alternative high school. Something that's coming up, an event coming up, is the Project Homeless Connect is happening January 27th in our area. And that brings to mind, what about homeless students?
Yeah, I asked today so I'd have information. The most recent data that we have, and you know, it's as accurate as we can make it, is that 3% of the students in our school district are homeless. And that, I mean, that's 60 or 70 students across the board, K through 12. Those numbers went up in 2007 after the big storm when people were displaced, and they never quite came down again. That's been a really hard thing to recover from in a community way. People in social services would know this, where the general public might not. But a homeless, you know, a student who is 16 and is living on friends' couches while going to school is classified as homeless in our numbers. So it's not somebody that is sleeping outdoors, you know, it doesn't have to be. You know, I don't think we have students that are literally not sleeping under roofs.
But they don't have their own homes.
They don't have homes. And we have some services that we provide for them. We do not have much money in that fund. There's a particular fund that's where it has to be spent. And of course, we want to spend it. There's some clothing, transportation, things like that. Rachel Thomas, who's a counselor at Astoria High School, one of the three counselors there, is the liaison for the homeless, you know, if you need help because you're a homeless student. And again, that number at the high school, and you can ask for her, Rachel Thomas, 325-3911.
It's surprising to me that there are that many folks, that many students.
It is surprising, isn't it? And is humbling to think that the schools, for some students, that's the food that they get during the course of a day. You know, we talk back and forth about the breakfast program or this or that, but really we are feeding some students their only food, and it's free for them. I think we do have students who have a really difficult home life. It's humbling to think that, as a person on the school board, that the work we do
is so important,
can have that impact, and so we need to do it well. And the structures need to be there, and the care needs to be there.
For some, I know for some kids, that's their main structure.
Because
the home structure is not happening or is very difficult.
Right. Right. We have 3% homeless, but as far as poverty, it's probably varying from school to school between 40 and 50%. And we base those numbers on students who are signed up for free and reduced lunch. We also know that once students come to middle and high school, they're less likely to enroll for their free and reduced lunch because they feel a stigma about that. So there's probably more, you know, that need those services.
If you feel that your child is going to need extra help, they're really struggling, maybe behaviorally or academically, what do you recommend that folks can do?
In a regular scenario, you know, your child is struggling. We've put in a lot, especially in math, which the district as a whole is really trying to improve our students' achievement in math. There are after-school tutoring hours at the middle and high school that can be accessed. And so there's extra help in that way. I think often parents know, and often a child's teacher will know, that something just isn't quite right, or there's issues that this child needs extra help with. There's a lot in place as far as academics, you know, behavioral issues and social issues and you know, learning issues. Talk to their teacher.
One thing I wanted to clarify is that special ed is not just for kids who have perhaps some physical difficulties, but it's also for kids who are very bright but are struggling.
There's eligibility requirements in many areas. You know, there's learning disabilities and social issues and, you know, behavioral issues, physical disability. And there's quite a wide range of that going on. You know, when you talk about autism, I mean, there's autism that is completely debilitating. There's that sort of mild on the spectrum that does affect you socially.
Asperger's.
So, but the best thing to do is talk to your child's teacher, and they will either reassure you that your child is doing well. And I mean, I, as a parent, pursue what I feel the need to pursue to be your child's advocate. The wheels of being evaluated for eligibility can be put in place by either the teacher or the parent can ask for that. And some parents don't know that you can actually ask.
I have found difficulty sometimes in knowing what's going on, as far as maybe things are not being brought home. You just don't know what's going on in the classroom. And I do like that I can go online and look at assignments that have not been handed in. You can look and see what's going on.
If you're a parent in our school district, and most of the school districts do this now, they're probably different sites, but if you're not hooked up to the online, if you don't have a password and aren't hooked up, you can contact your school and get set up for that. Usually they set you up for that when you register for school at the beginning of the year. And once you're in it, you're in it. Like, you don't need to even...
It's a great tool.
You can check current progress and you can see how they're doing. If they're not big communicators, I know my kids, they don't... How was school today?
Fine.
What'd you do? Nothing. You know. Uh-huh. So then I can check in with them.
One last thing I did want to ask you, Laura, was, is there anything parents can do volunteer-wise to help out in the school?
Yeah, I had wonderful experiences when my kids were in elementary school, and they liked it when I came to school, which, of course, changes in middle school and high school, volunteering in their classrooms. And the best thing to do is just ask their teachers. You know, some teachers want you to take a group and read, you know, so they can get more small group time. Some teachers really like would appreciate having a bunch of copies made for an hour. I think it really depends on the teachers. Even up through sixth grade, I think a lot of teachers appreciate parent volunteers on projects, on field trips. Also, there's parents' clubs that raise money to provide extra for field trips, for supplies, for teachers. Teachers can ask the parents' club for resources and supplies and a bus for a field trip and things like that. And the parents' clubs go all the way through the middle school.
Well, we have to wrap up now, Laura. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Well, I would just say, and I am a school parent, and I'm also a school official. So as a parent, I think it's really important that you speak up and speak out, advocate for your child. Don't ever be afraid to talk to a teacher or a principal about an issue that concerns you.
Laura, I want to thank you so much for coming in. And as a mom and a school board member, you're putting in a lot of extra time. I don't think they pay you to be on the school board.
No.
I really appreciate the work that you're doing.
Oh, thank you.
We've been listening to Parenting 101 with guest Laura Snyder from the Astoria School Board. I'm Elizabeth Menetre, and join me next month for the third Monday of the month at 9:30 for more of Parenting 101.